Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Gym Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefer, and this is episode number 274. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. It just helps me continue to highlight the great people we have in our profession. Also, want to thank our sponsors, and specifically General Wear, for bringing this episode to you for free. I only partner with companies that I believe in, both the people and the product, and I believe in General Wear, what they're doing. They're an innovative company, and if you're doing any kind of velocity-based training, I would definitely look into them. So if you're in the market, please reach out. If not, just let them know how much you appreciate them being a part of the show. This week, I'm joined by Todd Hammer. He's the head strength coach at George Washington. That's hard for me to say, actually, considering you've been at Robert Morris for 12 years. But you're at George Washington University now and just been one of the leaders in our profession. Has been given back through articles and presentations and the whole deal. So, man, I appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Todd, I mentioned, you know, Robert Morris for 12 seasons. You know, you've been George Mason, Marist, VCU, Citadel. I think you were at Pittsburgh as well. Lots of different places there. Where do you feel like you really kind of became who you are today? Which experience had the most profound effect on you?
You know, probably just logistically, I was at Robert Morris 12 years. So being a director for 12 years, and I was lucky because I was able to be a director. I was at Marist College, small Division I school, as a head strength coach. Like, I think I was 25 years old. Now, as you know, no one should be a head strength coach at that age.
Sure.
You were one as well. And the mistakes I made, the things I did wrong are obscene. I was lucky because I was able to step back and be an assistant for 3 years after that, George Mason. And my boss at George Mason, Handy, helped me a lot. But again, then getting that opportunity to come back to being a director. And you actually said something, I think you said something recently in one of these interviews where you said, no one knows how to be a strength coach till they're the head strength coach or something right along those lines. And, you know, it's so true. And I think everyone should be ahead, have to go back and be assistant, and then go be ahead again.
Yeah.
Because you look at the world so differently that second time around. You just see things. And my 12 years with Robert Morris, I was very lucky. I got to be a head strength coach in my hometown, 3 miles from work. It was a very good situation for me and my family. And so I really think, obviously, the amount of time I spent there and being able to stay at one school as a director for as long as I did really changed my view of who I am as a person and as a coach. And you know who did it most for me, in all honesty, is the athletes. I think, yeah, I learned more from them than they learned from me.
I would echo that sentiment exactly. You grow up so much in this profession, and especially if you're a head strength coach early, you're forced to grow up at an accelerated rate. And, you know, that causes you to make lots of mistakes along the way, you know, and even, you know, 20 plus years in the business, I still make mistakes on a daily basis. But what's probably the biggest mistake you've made in this profession and how you learn from it?
Oh man, the biggest mistake, I mean, can we just pick them? You know, a few years back, a friend of mine and a guy who writes for Elite FDS as well, Chase Carnes, posted something on Facebook, and it said, make sure you record everything. And he quoted and said, Todd Hammer. I remember reading the quote, and I was like, this is a great quote. Who said, oh, me? No. Record more and use that information. I think the biggest mistake I've made is not sticking to what I'm recording, why I'm recording it, utilizing that information. Too often, we have strength coaches collect data just for collecting data's sake.
Right.
And it doesn't help anyone. Use your data, communicate it to your athletes. I think I've made that mistake so many times. And especially as a young strength coach, and especially at a small school where you're overseeing multiple teams, and you don't have the ability maybe
right
to do that. But what you are collecting, you're not using. And I think I made that mistake over and over. I was lucky enough to have Fergus Conley come out and speak to us, and I said, what tech? What do we need? He said, just weigh your athletes every week.
Yeah.
That will tell you a lot about what's going on with the athlete, just their body weight. So I think my biggest mistake is not knowing what was going on, not looking at the data. I think I'm pretty good looking to the athlete. How do you feel? But am I actually looking at the data and getting that feedback as well? Because, you know, we love to pride ourselves on, hey, the athletes are honest with us, but not always. You know, there's still issues that the kids are hiding from us. The young lady, the young men and the young ladies are hiding. So I think too often I'm kind of a touchy-feely guy. I want to talk to you and see how you feel. And yeah. I forget, I have information over here that's telling me a lot that I'm not doing a great job of. And it's honestly still a mistake I make today.
Yeah.
I'm still working on it.
It's a mistake we all make, and we're so quick to try to grab the latest tech, the latest this, but the reality is those simple conversations or, you know, looking at the data you're already recording, whether or not the athletes are regressing in their exercises, regressing in their intensity or their body weight or whatever it may be, that gives you a pretty good indication of what level of stress they're under, be it athletic, be it, you know, physical, whatever. So I agree with that completely. You know, you and I have been in this field for quite some time now, and you know, back, I 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, it wasn't nearly as common to be hearing coaches talk about the touchy-feely side of strength and conditioning. You know, it wasn't, even now, to show vulnerability is still almost considered a weakness. You and I have always kind of, bonded over that, the fact that we've been the athlete comes first, and to hear their weaknesses and their challenges, we have to be first willing to talk about our weaknesses and our challenges and extend that olive branch first. It's not always the case. Talk a little bit about developing athletes beyond just the weight room and what strength coaches can do, even tactical things that they can go back and implement that were things that were foreign to you early in your career but are commonplace now.
Yeah, I think and you said something and it really ties that together for what I'm going to go with is be a human and create humanizing moments.
Yeah.
We are all wrong a lot. And the more we accept that and let the athletes see that sometimes we're wrong, the better. Let me start that answer by also saying that one of the biggest mistakes I see in young strength coaches, they come in, here's how it will be done. Iron fist is down. You will be 15 minutes early. And I say, what happens when you mess up? Right. What do you mean? Like, we have all these expectations on the athlete. What about you? So you're going to mess something up. So first thing I do to get, you know, a connection with the athlete, say flat out, I'm an imperfect person. I promise you, I'm going to mess up. And every coach I met with here, and even on my interview, I said, I'm going to mess up. 9 out of 10 times, my heart's going to be in the right place, but I'm going to mess up. And when I do mess up, I'm going to take ownership and we're going to move forward. But things I've done, one example is one of my favorite things we did every year at Robert Morris. And I hate kind of going back there being I'm now at GW, but obviously it's where I spent the last 12 years and I've been working here now 8 days. So I'm still trying to get my bearings here, but there's a Tuskegee Airmen War Memorial in Pittsburgh, and I think I might have written about this on one of my articles on Elite, but I would have our teams run the hill to the memorial, and then I would give them about 15 minutes just to kind of be present in that moment and look at the memorial, see, you know, read the words that are there. And I'd pull the team up, and there was one area that I always read to them, and it was two sentences, and it was a Tuskegee Airmen War Memorial, I forget the gentleman who said it, but the quote hanging on the memorial is, we helped African-Americans hold their heads high in this country. And then the second part of the quote is, America is not perfect, but I will hold her hand till she gets well. And I say, that's me and that's you. And that's your coach. And that's your athletic trainer and your athletic director. We are not perfect. But if you take this man who went to World War II, came back and wasn't permitted to eat in certain restaurants or go to certain bathrooms, use certain water fountains. And he said, you're not perfect, but I'm going to help you get there. Then we can come together as a team and say, hey, the coach called the wrong play, but that's okay. Cause I know the coach is going to work and be better tomorrow. Or I, as a strength coach, maybe didn't do the best lift we could have had that day, but that's okay. Cause you're going to help me. I'm going to help you. And learning, I think that ties right into servant leadership. How are you saying to those people, we're going to move together? This is not me pushing you. It's us pushing one another. And every group I've started with here, I've shared that story. I've told them about, you know, the mistakes I'm going to make to prepare them for the fact that we're a team. Right. We're not a group of individuals. And to me, it's just as exciting to win conference championships as it is to, you know, I got a text 2 weeks ago from my former defensive end who married a former softball pitcher and had their first child. Like, that's awesome. That means you meant something to them and they mean something to you. Right. So finding ways, you know, those different ways to reach them outside of strength and conditioning, because at the end of the day, we're just a vehicle for life skills. I mean, I can look on your shelf and you have Tennessee and South Florida and Eastern Michigan. There are a lot of people that went to the NFL from there, and there's a lot more that didn't.
Yep.
And so at the end of the day, these student athletes are going to remember how you made them feel and what you did for them whenever they're working that 9-to-5 job. Yeah. Or when they're a teacher, or a strength coach, whatever they go and do. The NFL guys are great to celebrate. So are the teachers and the engineers out there.
Yeah, I just got a Facebook message. I posted on Instagram the other day, but I got a Facebook message from one of my former walk-on players at South Florida, and him and another walk-on player had gotten together for dinner, and my name came up in conversation, and he reached out and just said, hey, you know, I really just want to thank you for always treating the walk-ons just as fairly as you treated the rest of the team. And both those guys are in their last year of residency in med school. And just
that's awesome.
That's the kind of stuff that, you know, I mean, that fires me up more than the guy that goes to the NFL, to be honest with you. And yeah. I love them all, but at the end of the day, you know, I've often said, I mean, the weight room is the best laboratory for life, because you're having to develop all these skills that are going to go on, and you're doing it on a daily basis. And you know, I think what you and I both agree on, that I think strength coaches have a problem with, is that, you know, just because you're maybe touchy-feely, or you show some vulnerability, or you say that you're in it together, or you're asking for their opinion, doesn't mean that you're going to hold them any less accountable or not maintain a standard at a high level. I mean, I tell a story often about me throwing a plate at a 45-pound plate at a player for being 5 minutes late, and all I had to do was bring that kid over and say, hey, what's the reason? What's going on? You know, oh, your grandparents, you know, you lost a grandparent. You know, let's why don't you go back and come back at a time, you know, a little bit later on, and we'll get that workout in and move on, instead of throwing a freaking 45-pound plate at the kid, you know. Or the guy's like, hey, coach, I just overslept. Okay, well, we talked about what our policy is for being late, so let's do that. Let's knock that out and let's move on, you know.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to mean any less accountability. And I think that's the part that I had to learn as a young strength coach, as a 23-year-old head strength coach, to, you know, to become a better coach and a better person and to be a better human, like you said. It wasn't easy early, but it wasn't until I did those things later in my career that I realized the potential of really the impact that can be made as a coach. And
how many coaches do you know that have a similar story? Kid was late, and I find out it's because he just found out his mother has cancer.
Yeah.
You know, we all have those stories where a kid's late, and you start screaming at the young man, the young lady, and they break down in tears and say, Grandma just died.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And everyone has that story. I think Brian Mann had a similar story, and it's like, I feel like that moment we are the worst human beings ever.
No question.
Because we're worried about bench press, Grandma just died.
Yeah.
You know, or mom has cancer, and you've had it, and I've had it, where kids come in and say, I had an athlete reach out to me this year and say, you know, I know you're invited to my wedding in a month. Well, my significant other's cheating on me. It's over. And I said, I'm sorry. Have you spoken to your parents? And she said, I called you first. And I thought, why me?
Yeah,
and
right.
I realized, because with me, I'm not the parent. She can kind of, it's like a dry run for talking to mom and dad.
Yeah, sure.
And this was a former athlete of mine. Great. You know, but that's the connection I think we often create. We have to understand that we don't know everything's going on in our lives.
Right. Right. Well, it's the whole, you know, comic book thing with great power, you know, with great opportunity there is great responsibility, or whatever that quote is, you know. And I think, you know, having that kind of relationship with your athletes, you know, it's a big responsibility. You know, that means you gotta pick up the phone when they call, at the good times and the bad, you know.
Yeah,
And that's not as easy to do as you go along as well. You know, we another thing that we share is we both went through kind of challenges of this profession, you know, the hirings and the firings and the dealing with, you know, coaches and, you know, all the challenges that kind of come with this. And you, I wrote an article when I got, you know, let go from Tennessee. You wrote into a similar article, you know, about, you know, and I think it was on Lead. I'm not real sure, but just about, you know, being prepared and you know, what the realities of this profession are and having an understanding of that when you get in. Because there was nobody when we got in saying that kind of stuff. You know,
there's
nobody saying, hey, you better make sure you have 3 to 6 months of funds in the bank because you're going to get fired at some point. And so, you know, talk a little bit about the challenges of this profession and recommendations that you have for young coaches, because it is as much as it is one of the best professions in the world and getting those opportunities to impact and mentor young people, like you said, it's also, you know, it's not a lot of fun not knowing if you're going to be in the same job from year to year and having to buy and sell houses and live apart. You know, you're living apart. I had to live apart from my family for 3.5 years. You know, that's not easy.
No. I drove back to Pittsburgh this weekend. I said to my wife, every night when I go to bed, I question, did I do the right thing? And actually, it's funny. I was texting J.L. Holdsworth today. And I said, every moment I was taking a shuttle we have 3 weight rooms and one's 4 miles away. So I was taking the shuttle over there and JL had texted me and I texted him back and said, he said, how's the job? I said, job's great. Everything's good. And every moment I questioned, did I make the right decision? And I don't think it has anything to do with, I think it's a great job. And I love the leadership here. And I like I said to you before, we were talking beforehand, I'm drank the Kool-Aid. I love what the AD is selling. I love the vision of the athletic department here. And I respect the hell out of the predecessor here, which makes it that much easier when the person before you, but, you know, I'm not living with my wife and child right now. And so every day there's a moment where I have this moment and say, am I doing the right thing? Because when I'd been at Robert Morse for 12 years, and that's very unusual. And I thought I was immune to new coaches come in and we get fired. I really thought I was immune to it. I would, you know, people would ask, I say, oh, one day I'll get fired. But, you know, deep down in my heart, I thought, no, I think I'm safe.
Right.
And, it was interesting. The day I was let go, I thought I would be upset, and I kind of wasn't. Right. I knew it was time to move on anyways. And so I went and I grabbed my bag. I packed my stuff up, and I went down to Casey Williams' gym. I don't know if you know Casey. He writes for Elite as well, power lifter, and I trained. And we just talked about life. And he said, you need some work while you're unemployed? I said, sure. He said, all right, you're hired. So I went to work the next day. I signed the papers right there. And I went to work for him part-time while I decided what my next move was. And we had some hard conversations, me and a wife. And we said, is this something that maybe I'm done being strength conditioning coach? Maybe I look at, you know, Mark Watts is a good friend. I think he's as respected in our industry as anyone. He's a third grade Catholic school teacher.
Right.
And I did look at other options, and I interviewed for other jobs. I had job opportunities outside of strength and conditioning. And, you know, me and my wife had these conversations, what is best for our family? Because at the end of the day, I didn't want to look back 20 years from now and be working at Starbucks and say, life's good, but, you know, I never did what I could have done.
Yep.
And honestly, it came back to a decision about my son. I said, I don't want my son to think, and there's nothing wrong with working at Starbucks if that's your passion, and that's great. I mean, I love coffee, but that's not my passion. I want to drink coffee. I don't want to make people's coffee all day long. And so deciding what's best for you and your family. And I think, again, young strength coaches, they come in so wound up, so ready to roll, and they're ready to put that 19-hour day in and sleep in the office. And the thing I will say to them is go home.
Right.
Go home. I love to talk about a former assistant of mine, Ralph Petrella, is now at Texas Tech. And Ralph is a great strength coach. And I would have to throw him and chase him out of the weight room every day. It's like, all right, we're done. Well, no, we had a soccer athlete. You want to come in for extra? I'm like, Ralph, you've been here 14 hours today. Go right. home. I think the young strength coaches need to understand that if you don't sharpen your saw, you're no good. You know, the greatest lesson in the Seven Habits book is sharpen your saw. Make sure every day you're coming in sharp. my athletic director, I think it was, she has referenced this in our last meeting, I think it was from Energy Bus or one of those books, was feed others with your overflow. And if your cup's not full, you're giving people parts of you that you're going to need later. And so, you know, find things you enjoy outside of strength and conditioning. You know, when I was unemployed, well, you know, working part-time for 3 months, I got a lot of great mountain biking in because I love mountain biking. Luckily, I had some great trails by my house. But if you have nothing else, you're going to wallow in a deep depression when you get fired. And I'm going to tell everyone out there, you will be fired. We're all going to be fired eventually.
Right.
I'll be fired again probably. Don't take it personally. It's just, you know, time to move on. Move to the next thing. Give everyone a high five and a way out the door. I have no hard feelings towards anyone who had anything to do with me being let go. It's business, and they want to go in a different direction. And like I said, I respected the person here before me, and I respect the person that took my job at Robert Morris.
Right.
So it makes me feel good. I think the athletes are still getting quality service there.
Yeah, I think I've talked about, you know, just the challenges that I've faced throughout my career. I wrote a book on it for the most part, you know, and I think, you know, I've shared quite a bit of that. But I will say this, in the last 2 years of being with Play, like, and I'm still a strength coach. I coach, you know, quite a bit all around the world. You know, but I do it on my own terms now, which is kind of cool. And
yeah.
The biggest realization that I found was that I was that guy. I mean, I was the guy that you had to chase out of the weight room. I was going to be there before everybody. I was going to be the last person out, you know, and the whole deal. And it's just the way I was trained and did. But I had zero hobbies. I had zero. Like, I didn't have a single I really didn't have a vice either. I didn't chew. I didn't drink. I didn't, you know, fool around with my wife. Or, you know, I didn't have any vices that way, you know. And I think, you know, being out of college strength conditioning and having time to kind of, you know, to find some hobbies, man, you're right. Like, mountain biking, like, that's my mindfulness. Like, if you're, you know, like, yeah. Like for mountain biking, if you don't pay attention to what you're doing, you're going to eat a tree really, really quick. You know, and so you better pay attention to being in the moment. And so that's my form of mindfulness. Jiu-jitsu is another form of just, you know, that's been really, really helpful, and it's made me a better person. And so I would agree with that. I think there's so many things that we could deep dive on that. I mean, making sure you have that you're transition, you're having your plans for periods of transition. How you're going to sell a house? Are you going to have enough money in the bank? You know, all those types of things. But I think those are the conversations, and I respected when you put that article out, that we need to continue to share, because younger coaches need to be better prepared. Because I was fortunate. I was sitting on a contract and in a pretty good situation. Didn't walk right into another job, but you pretty much went to another job pretty quick. But there's definitely people in this profession that, you know, they go 6 months, 8 months, a year, 2 years out of the business. And, you know, 2 years out of the business is hard to get back in a lot of little ways. And so you got to be prepared and develop skills that are not just strength and conditioning. You know, you got to develop, you know, like, one of the things that I've always respected about you is that your skill of a writer and contributing back. I mean, ultimately, if Todd Hammer wanted to put out a book, there would have been people that would have wanted to buy that, you know, in that period of transition, you know. And I think that that's something that, again, coaches, they just get so focused, so, you know, laser focused on being that technician that they don't focus on being that manager, that entrepreneur at all. Well, man,
Go ahead. I was going to say, I think that ties to, I think it was good to great when they mentioned, are you employee first or are you customer first?
Yeah.
And this is one I struggled with for a long time, because we say it's about the student athlete, it's about the student athlete. Well, right now I have five people working for me, five people and a couple interns. And that's five times more face time with our student athletes than I have. So I need to be employee first. And that's one of the other things. Take care of those employees. They'll take care of you in the long run. Right. And I've been very lucky. I've had some great strength coaches that have worked for me. I mean, Ryan Horn came on as an intern for me, and I knew he was smarter than me the day he walked in the door. The guy, I mean, Ryan is a sponge, and he knows words like I don't even try to talk to him most of the time because I don't know what he's talking about. Because the guy knows things. But if you take care of those people, they're going to take care of you. And I have a rule. If you need a day off, you get it. You just tell me when it is. Make sure not everyone's taking the same day off, and you get that day off. Because like you said, most of us want to work 15-hour days.
Right.
So when you say I need a day off, it's probably for something big. And it's probably you're going to be a better employee when you return. So we'll cover what you have, and we'll keep moving forward. So I think that ties directly in what you just said, is that finding ways to self-care, whether it be mountain biking, and also staff care. You know, how are we keeping each other kind of – how are we sharpening each other's saws? That's an important thing in this industry.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. You know, you do a great job, I mean, be it giving back to the community with different resources, but also, you know, not promoting, but sharing – how you continually learn. I mean, you know, you post about books that you're reading, talk about books that you're reading, but very, very rarely is it a strength and conditioning book posting about. You know, talk a little bit about your personal kind of continuing education structure, plan, whatever you want to call it.
It's probably about as good as my programming for myself and my lifting, not very good. So full disclosure here, I'm not a very good writer. My wife's a very good editor. So my wife happened to be my editor. She edited a lot of books probably on your shelf, and you'll find her name in there if you look hard enough. But I've been lucky because she has a master's in English, and she'll read somewhere in the ballpark of a book a week. And when you hang around someone who's reading as much as she is, if you're not keeping up, you're not going to be able to have a conversation because you're dumb, for lack of a better term. And so I don't think I have a system in what I read. We own a few thousand books. We have a library that is packed full, 3D books stuffed on top. And we have a library card. And many times I'll just go to the library and just start looking around, peruse what interests you. I have a lot of strength coaches email me and say, what should I read? And I say, I don't know. I'm not you.
Right.
And I've come to the conclusion that my answer is, what interests you? Okay, now go to the library, look at that topic, and just kind of peruse it and see which one book kind of stands out to you. And if you get four chapters in and you're not feeling it, put it back and find a different one.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what's going to drive you. I know there are certain books that The Jungle by Upton Sinclair changed my life. When I read that book, I changed how I view other humans. A book I've mentioned to a lot of strength coaches is To the Last Breath. Professor Georgetown wrote it. And that book really changed how I deal with our student athletes and everyone around me. And so my system is go over to the bookshelf, go to the used book sale, see what kind of stands out, listen to others' opinions. And the one problem about reading a lot and letting people know you read a lot is I get a lot of books in the mail randomly, some with no name. I actually have a great story I have to share. One day me and my wife were leaving our house, walking down to this wine festival in our town. I'm headed down to the wine festival, and I look, and the little old lady neighbor has a wall, and there's a computer bag sitting off the wall. It looked like it fell. And I thought, oh, this lady, she has to get down this 8-foot wall. It's kind of a pain. So I jumped down there, grabbed the bag, figured I'd bring it to her house. Jumped down, climbed back up the wall. And I'm looking at the computer bag, and I'm like, this computer bag looks really eerily familiar. And I'm like holding it. I'm like, is this mine? Is this my computer bag? And I open it and it's mine. There's my papers and my notes. And I'm like, why is it my neighbor's yard? And I look at my wife. I'm like, this is my computer bag. And she said, which car did you take today? I said, I took your car. And she said, you didn't move your car all day. I said, no. She said, I went in it today and everything was thrown about it. The glove compartment was open. I figured you were digging for something and just, you know, left it. And I said, no. She said, I think someone broke in the car and stole your bag. And well, what happened, I guess they stole it. They ran three houses up, opened it up, and saw the only thing in it worth value was the book Extreme Ownership. So they threw it away. Well, I hadn't read the book yet. I had it. Someone had mailed it to me randomly. I still don't know who. And so I was like, well, I better read this book then before someone steals it again. And I thought the irony of the fact that the thief, he's the guy that needed to read Extreme Ownership. That's a great book. Yeah. Because he needs to own his what he does. And so that book I really enjoyed. I don't really like his podcast, but I loved his book. And I really liked the points he made in the book of owning your decisions, and everything you do is about, it's on you to make it right. You know, people complain, oh, we have to do this at our school. We have to do this. This is the system to do this. Well, that's what you have. What are you going to complain about? Or are you going to get it done?
Right.
And I think he makes a great point there, but I think that story just kind of ties it together nicely.
That's fantastic. That's hilarious. Well, man, we end the show with some resources here. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Oh, the best piece of coaching advice is be flexible. Tim Kontos once texted me and said, you know, you're about as flexible as glass, Hammer. And Tim Kontos is a good friend, a good mentor. He was a boss of mine when I was a GA. And I always took, don't be as flexible as glass. You'll get fired real quick. I like to think I've moved more to like plexiglass. You know, I'm like hockey players can check me a little. I'll bounce around. You know, be flexible as a strength coach. Understand that coaches are going to be late. They're going to be at practice and be doing things and come in fit. Deal with it.
Right.
You know, improvise, adapt, and overcome ties right into that. But just be flexible.
Absolutely. You gave us a bunch of books already. Give us a app and website recommendation.
App, I'm going to throw two out. Team Builder is awesome.
Yeah.
They've really changed my life. I don't know, you know, who's all worked with them, but they just – it makes everything, it simplifies everything. The other app I like for people who don't have tech is the Iron Path Pro, which I think is like $299, and it does bar tracking and it gives you some velocity. It's not 100% accurate, but if you have no ability to do anything and you can show it to an athlete, all of a sudden you're creating competition. So yes. I like that app to use, and you asked for and a website. Well, I'm going to be a homer here. I got to go with Lead FTS. And the reason is that I don't know many sites that have that much free content that has been built up over 10 years. Yeah. And I think one problem is too often we disagree with one thing, and then all of a sudden we can't listen. You know, well, I don't box squat. I front squat. You know, I'm a Mike Boyle guy, so I front squat. I don't box squat, so I can't listen to Lead. Well, I'm a Lead guy, come from West Side, so I can't listen to Mike Boyle.
Right.
There's a lot of free information there. You don't have to believe everything or do everything they say, but you can learn still from there. And I think, you know, what Dave's done with the information there is it's endless. It's amazing.
Yeah, I agree. Well, man, like, you know, like we talked about earlier, I mean, you've given up an hour here, you know, while you're 8 days on the job is a testament enough to show the type of person you are and the character you have and the amount of work that you do to give back to this community. And I mean, again, I took, you know, a couple pages of notes here and just appreciate who you are and how you do your business, man, and really enjoyed the conversation.
Well, thank you very much. It was awesome being on here.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.